Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Come on! Welcome to Lifeblood. This is George G, and the time is right. Welcome to today's guest, strong and powerful Ryan Purvis. Ryan, are you ready to do this?
I'm ready. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Ryan is the head of solutions for Lakeside Software. They're a global leader in digital experience monitoring, working to improve the everyday digital experiences of employees. Ryan, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Great. Thank you for having me. So I am a South African living in the UK. I've been working with Lakeside for 10 years, mostly as a customer, and I've recently made the switch over. And we've been doing a lot around digital employee experience, which is measuring what is happening on a user's workstation to help them to do their work better and have the right tools. And that's about, you know, the right laptop, desktop, or virtual machine, using the right applications. And if they're not using applications, taking those things off the desktop to improve performance and experience. And as most people have now realized through a pandemic, the ability to work remotely requires having the right tools, the right connectivity, and the right access to things. And we've been helping companies do that with and help their employees.
Nice. So how does it actually work? Lakeside is on my machine and it's just observing how I'm interacting.
Yeah, correct. So we have a cloud offering. So customers can sign up and get our cloud tenant, deploy the agents to their desktops. And then, yes, the agent sits in the background. It's monitoring real time what the user is doing. There is anonymization built into the product, which can be switched on. But in essence, we can know which applications you're working in, how your memory, your CPU, your disk is behaving. And then that can be used as a way to decide, have you got the right size laptop, the right spec? Are you not utilizing software in the right way? Are there licenses we can reclaim because you haven't used a certain version of a product? So if we said like Adobe, a lot of people think they need to have Adobe Writer to create PDFs. So they pay, you know, whatever the $1,000 it is for that license. But in reality, you could probably get away with the built-in PDF Writer that comes with Windows and the Adobe Reader, which is free, saving the company money. And if you've got 10,000 users, you know, that could be a couple million dollars that you're saving or just reclaiming licenses. So it's very much about making use of data to make good decisions. And that's what our product does. We have, you know, quite a deep collection of data that we collect and quite a wide set of touch points. So across the entire desktop. And the way we interpret that data and bring insights from that, we give decision makers good information to make good decisions.
And how this is obviously a big problem, otherwise Lakeside wouldn't exist. What is the scope of the problem?
Well, there's so many use cases. I think that's where it is. If you've got this kind of thing in place, and I've walked into organizations where they don't have it, and people are making decisions based on opinions and guesses and estimations. And I'll never forget one of my first weeks in a job, and one of the senior guys came and said, "Should we get everyone second screens?" And I said, "Well, you know, if you look at the science, there's definitely a productivity gain, but I can't tell you without having something to measure it. And that's something we can answer that question. We can tell you if someone needs a second screen straight away, because we see by user behavior and what they're doing between switching between apps. If they're switching between apps a lot, that probably means that they need a second screen to have one application on one screen and the other application on another screen. And they can be, you know, 30 to 50% more productive with that sort of thing. That's in my thought.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And so just that's a good example right there. And you can actually track just how much time. And that could be, I think you said 30%. It's obviously going to be dependent on each individual and all that good stuff, but it works out to be like a lot of time.
Oh, definitely. And I think that was actually a study by Microsoft, and I'm talking probably 10, 15 years ago when that study came out. So, and I don't think the numbers have changed that much, but I can honestly tell you that, you know, I've moved away from Windows to Mac, and I use my iPad as a second screen. And I noticed just by doing that, how that benefits me. If I'm sitting somewhere in a coffee shop and I want to do something, it just makes that easier. And I think there's a comfort set thing to that. So being able to make that decision to buy the right size screens, you know, don't go and buy a whole bunch of little screens. If people working on graphic designs or architectural designs or those sorts of things. And if you've got knowledge workers, which most of us are nowadays, you need to make that as easy as possible to see the information and to sort it out so that you can make your workflow efficient.
So y'all will tell me if I'm being inefficient. Do you also make recommendations on how to fix the inefficiency?
We don't get into people's working thing, but we'll pick up things around the system. So for example, if you open a lot of applications, and you leave them and you don't use them. So in the background, you've got, you know, 10 Excel spreadsheets open, a whole bunch of email messages open. That's all using resources. So we'll pop up an alert saying, you know, maybe you should close some windows. If you've got an application that's using too much resource, too much memory, too much CPU, which will affect your experience, we'll recommend that gets closed, or we'll even close it for you. You know, some of the proactive things like a disk cleanup, for example, if you're running out of disk space, we'll automatically clean that up for you. That again helps the user. And if you think about this from a sort of wider IT service point of view, a lot of companies will use a ticket as a form of driving work that has to be done to help a user. If you avoid the ticket, you make a better experience for the user because they feel like IT is on top of it. So there's a perspective change. But also that ticket sometimes has a cost associated to it, like $10, $20. And again, if you can fix those or avoid those tickets by using automation, which is something you can do with our product, you could save money. You know, if you're saving 10% of your tickets by automation, or 20% or 30%, you multiply that up by $10. You know, that could be, depending on how big your environment is, another way to reduce the cost. I wouldn't say this is a return on investment tool where you're going to necessarily make money out of the tool, but you'll save money, which helps you to spend that money elsewhere.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How is it received? I could see both ways. I could see somebody who is sort of, I don't want to call them more enlightened, but more comfortable with it, saying this is awesome, it's helpful. But I can also see somebody else saying, I don't like Big Brother looking at all my work.
Yeah, and that's why I said the anonymization exists. And there's obviously access controls and that sort of thing to the data. If you specifically go into areas like Germany or France, where there's workers' councils and certain regulations around that, who can see the data. So we protect for those sorts of things. There are people, and it's a maturity curve, I would say, that you get a certain point where you're okay where you're not okay with this stuff. You think you manage it all by yourself, and then as you get to bigger problems with bigger scale issues, you mature and say, actually, you know what? I don't mind if I give away that data. In fact, in most cases, you're working on a corporate machine that you don't own, so it's no different to your boss standing by your desk watching you work. You just got an agent watching. And most of the time, we actually don't care about what someone's doing at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning. What we care about is when that person was doing the work, was the machine in a good state? Were they not delayed by anything? So we have a health score that tells you what you're impacted on. So we might say, okay, that person working at 9 o'clock on a Monday, they had a very slow network because they were on Wi-Fi and they were sitting at the edge of the internal coffee shop, the cafeteria. We need to go and work on the Wi-Fi in that area to improve the service. And by having the data, you can go and derive that there's work to be done there. And then you can also check later on to see that their work's actually shown value. Now, that might reflect as a bunch of tickets that have been logged, or it might come back to you via surveys to say that actually, you know, I'm really impressed with our IT because this was an issue for me last week and now it's been fixed. So a lot of this is perception management, expectation management as well. I mean, I used to work in a few organizations where we would show customers, the internal customer, and I was working for the same business, what we were seeing. And they would appreciate that what we were showing them was in the nuts and bolts of how their machine was working and how we were investigating their problem. And it took away this opinionated, the machine is slow, to actually, the machine is not slow, your connectivity is slow because you're sitting on the edge of the Wi-Fi. And if you just went closer to the access point or you worked in a place that the Wi-Fi was better, you see the problem would go away. And that took away... For the user made them feel like we had control of it, but also that their issue was being dealt with proactively and they were making the business better and their work was getting better.
Okay. It's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
I don't know about you, but when I'm using AI for my business, I don't need it to tell me what to do. I know what I want. I just need help making it happen. With Wix, I finally have an AI tool that gets things done the way I want. I just have to describe the type of website I need, and it's ready. I can even ask it to manage my inventory, plan my next marketing campaign, or help out my customers. Wix gives me AI wherever I need it. Try it out at wix.com.
Yeah, and that 100%, I would rather know that and to not be frustrated by why is my computer slow or why am I not getting on a Wi-Fi, whatever it might be. I would 100% rather know that and have that information to be able to proactively just have a better experience and a better time. In terms of, and this is just sort of a more general kind of a question, is there ever too much optimization? And maybe that's just kind of a dumb question, but I'll throw it out there.
No, because what we found, you know, and having done this for a long time, is you never optimize everything fully. You fix one thing and you tend to, it's like whack-a-mole sometimes. You fix one thing and you break something else. Or by fixing this one thing, you now notice two other things you hadn't seen before, which now also need to be fixed. So there's always something that could be improved on. And I think that's one of the beauties of the space is that with using this sort of tooling, is you can see with the empirical data something that is changing and being affected by what you're doing. And often what was happening without having these tools, and I've worked in organizations that haven't had these tools, is it's a lot of subjective guessing to what's causing the problem. And that wastes a lot of time. So, and then your optimizations are no good because you really don't know what you're optimizing.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. And I was just thinking this morning about just how much time we do waste and how our minds are wandering like half the time. And we're constantly having to make decisions about things. And we have all these different thoughts going through our heads. So how can we do a better job of that? And without the empirical evidence that you're talking about, then I'm just kind of guessing, sort of flying by the seat of my pants kind of a thing. So I do see immense value and say, okay, well, we know this to be a fact, and we made these changes, and this is the result. And maybe it was the result we were looking for or we're expecting, or maybe it's totally different.
Yeah. And we've seen, you know, having the data that it's helped businesses make decisions. Like I worked with an organization that had a big sales force, and they were trying to decide whether they need to actually give their sales force tablets or laptops. And if you look to the successful salespeople, they were always on the road. And they spent a lot of time on the road doing very quick things, where a tablet and an app was a better fit for them than having a heavier laptop to carry around. And we could measure that and sort of justify the spend. And also the way they went with the tablet, with a built-in 3G connection, et cetera, and using a brand like an iPad, if that device got broken or stolen, they could replace it really easily. A person could walk into any shop and buy another iPad and be set up again. And it's those kinds of tangible things that really show the value of having this information.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a ton of sense. Like, and that's, I'm sure, a really, really, really big and expensive decision for a large organization is the difference between the laptop or a tablet, as you were just talking about. So I think that makes a ton of sense. I imagine that certain organizations are probably too small or not.
No. I mean, you know, one of the companies I worked with was only 10 users. So that's pretty, you know, it's a reasonably priced product in that sense. I think it comes back to that maturity thing. You know, what are you looking for and what are you trying to do to provide as a service to your end users? When we look at a customer, we're trying to understand what's important to them and why, what their value proposition is and how we can help them. And again, it comes back to making, you know, as I say, buying decisions or remote workers, security comes into it as well. We're not a security product, but some of the information we collect. And in fact, when this was originally set up, we just put out something for Log4j. Because we have all the data that we collect, we were able to detect the Log4j patch issues really quickly. And we built we configured our product in a couple of days to look for the specific things to help our customers find the Log4j issues in their environment. And that's one of the values of having the data is when you have it all, you just need to sift through it to get the stuff or find the stuff that you need. And that's really the part that we talk about in my team a lot is finding the solution for a customer.
Which makes sense. I love it. Well, Ryan, the people are ready for that difference-making tip. What do you have for them?
Well, it is as the theme we've had, measure what matters. And that's what our product does. It measures what matters, and then you can make decisions on that.
Well, I think that is great stuff. That definitely gets, come on. That's something else I've been thinking a lot about. It's that what gets measured gets managed. Then you need to measure what matters. So having an understanding of these are the important things I should be focused on. And just to your point, what we've been talking about is you just need to know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. In fact, that is one of our taglines, SysTrack Knows, which is our product. So
love it.
I'm glad you came up with it. That lined up nicely.
Boom. All right. Thank you so much for coming out. Where can people learn more about you and where can they learn more about Lakeside Software?
Great. So our website is lakesidesoftware.com. They can find me on LinkedIn, Ryan Purvis. Easy to find. And then I've also got a podcast, The Digital Workspace Works, where you can hear me muse about this sort of stuff on a weekly basis.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Ryan your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to lakesidesoftware.com and see if it's a good fit for your organization. Find Ryan on LinkedIn. It's Ryan Purvis, P-U-R-V-I-S. And give us the name of the podcast again, Ryan.
Digital Workspace Works.
Digital Workspace Works. Love it. Well, thanks again, Ryan.
Thanks so much. Good to meet you.
Likewise, and until next time, keep fighting the good fight. We are all in this together.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This holiday season, make your celebration unforgettable at Barcelona Restaurant. Gather friends and colleagues for a festive party, or share the spirit of Spain with Barcelona gift cards. Visit BarcelonaColumbus.com.
This is Michael Rosenbaum.
Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.